All right, Rabbi Say, good morning, good morning. Let us begin. Begin by thanking all of our sponsors this morning, to thank our Talmud Torah sponsors for the month of Iyar, Stephen Terry Zinn, for getting all the Shomer Joshuas this month in honor of their newest grandson, Matan Shmuel Aaron. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, you'll grow to be an incredible Ben Torah, Amev Esm Shalom Tovos. We thank our Daf Yomi sponsors today, the Eskin family, for those of us again, Bill Eskin, Zichron Levracha, was a member of the Shir who joined us on Zoom for a number of years. He was Nifter this past Masi Shabbos, and his Levaya was on Sunday. I discussed to attend his Levaya. You know, sometimes we don't realize there are so many people who we get to learn with each and every day who we don't even know. I didn't really know Bill, Zichron Levracha. Again, I knew him through seeing his name on Zoom. But certainly, again, a member of the Shir passes away. It behooves all of us to redouble our efforts a little bit to be able to give his neshama and aliyah. So we hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah. So actually, Bill had sponsored today's Shir in memory of his mother, Gittel Bas Nochum, whose yahrzeit is on the 25th of Iyar. We hope that in the merit of the Talmud Torah, so her neshama will have an aliyah, Bill's neshama will have an aliyah, and in merit Hashem, the family will have an incredible nechama in the years ahead. But with that, let us begin. We have a lot to do today. Today's daf is Mem Ches 48. But we are picking up on Mem Zayin Amud Beis 47b, and we are picking up also at the second wide line in. Elamas Nisim Kuli Bepsuli Eidos. Rather, our Mishnah, let's remember again, our Mishnah framed an interesting case where you have competing testimony about whether or not they saw someone who had killed, whether or not they saw the murderer. Remember again, Egla Rufa is only offered up, or really, I should say, the process is only done in a situation where the murderer is unknown. So where you have competing testimony, that's what the Mishnah was talking about. The Mishnah is actually talking about that the people who are giving testimony are not really fit for testimony. So the Eidos, Ochid Rabbi Nechemiah, the Amar, Rabbi Nechemiah says, Komakum Shemin the Torah Eid Echad, Halach Acha Rov Deos. Any situation when the Torah believes in Eid Echad, in general, I will say what we do is in the Eid Echad situation, since Eid Echad by definition is Pasol Le Eidos, so obviously in that type of situation, we look at numbers. We look at numbers. Vasu Shtei Noshim. Kishne Anoshim Beishachad, and therefore again Chazal went ahead and treated two women, two women against one man, like two men against one man. Veigadamri, and therefore also that's the case of Psule Eidos. Veigadamri, other possibility is Kalechad the Asa Eid Echad Kasher Meikara. Whenever you have an Eid Echad, a legitimate Eid Echad who has come initially, Afilu Mei Anoshim Ki Echad Damion. We'll say once an Eid Echad is believed, an Eid Echad Kasher, then by definition, even if a hundred women show up afterwards, it's considered to be like an Eid Echad. But how come I'm asking? So what's the case over here? Kigon Da'asoi Isha Meikara. The case over here is where the Eid Echad originally who came was a woman. I, the Tirsal Rabbi Nechemiah, Hachi, when it goes to Rabbi Nechemiah, you would answer the following. Rabbi Nechemiah Omer, Komakum Shemin the Torah Eid Echad, Halach Acha Rov Deos. Any situation where the Torah believed an Eid Echad, it becomes a numbers game. We look at which side of the testimony has the greater number of people. The Asu Shtei Noshim B'Isha Echos, Kishnei Anoshim B'Isha Echad. Aval, Shtei Noshim B'Isha Echad. But ultimately, again, if you have two women ultimately offering testimony against one man, or in other words, opposing one man's testimony, Ki Palgo Upalgo, Dami, it's as if you have half and half, in other words, if you have equal number of witnesses against each other. The Gemara says, well, if that's the case, Fatarte Psule Eidos Lamali, why do I need two cases in the Mishnah both to teach in the same halachos of Psule Eidos? You might have thought, when do we follow the majority of the number of witnesses? That's only the Chumrah. Avalukula lo, but maybe again when it creates a leniency, we do not. Kamashmulan, even in a leniency situation, we will follow Rov Deos. Good. So again, Gemara just trying to explain to us the cases of opposing testimony in Egla Rufa. The takeaway for us, remember, is that halacha lemaisa, the only time we're going to bring the Egla Rufa is when there is no testimony. But if there is some testimony pointing ultimately to the identity of the killer, then Allah HaMaisa, under those circumstances, we would not offer up Egla Rufa. Mishra Abu Harosin, the Mishnah said, once there was a proliferation of murders, so they stopped bringing the Egla Rufa. Turn Rabban on. Mishra Abu Harosin, Batla Egla Rufa. When there was a proliferation of murderers, they stopped. The Egla Rufa was bottled. Why? The Fishayna Ba'ala Safik. Mishra Abu Harosin, Begalui, Batla Egla Rufa. But unfortunately, when there was a decline in society and there were public murders. Public murders means, in other words, that people were killing each other, and there was no effort to hide it. When they found the corpse, they pretty much knew who the murderer was, even though no one actually saw the murderer do it, but they understood societally who was doing it, and therefore there was no longer an egla rufa. Mishrabanov. And similarly, again, the Mishnah said, when there was a proliferation of adultery, right? Ultimately, again, the waters of Sota stopped working. Tan Rabbanon, Benika Ishmiavan, we'll say, so we actually made reference to this earlier in the Masechta, but it's incredibly important now that we're coming back to this. The Pasuk says, when does the Sota waters work? Benika Ishmi Avon, when the man, the husband himself, is free of sin. Bizman Sha Ishminukum Avon, am I both in Sishto? When the man himself is free of the sin of immorality, that's when the water will check his wife. But if the man is not free from sin, i.e. the man himself is immoral, then then the water, the mesota, will not work on his wife. So the Pasuk says, you might have thought that it's only if the husband himself is immoral. But what happens if his family members are more immoral? What happens, again, if his sons or his daughters are immoral? You might have thought that wouldn't impact the husband. So Tashma, lo efkod al b'noseichem ki tizinena, va'al kaloseichem ki tinafena. So I'll say this is incredible. Not only does the man himself have to be free of immorality, but his offspring have to be free of immorality. In other words, that if his offspring are immoral, then the water won't work on the man's husband either. So, which is fascinating. What's the pshat? It sounds like what the Gemara is saying is the concept of morality or immorality, that is something that a parent embeds in a child. So if a child is acting in an immoral fashion, ultimately, where do they get that type of behavior from? Where were those seeds planted from? So the Gemara seems to say it must come from the parents. It must come from the parents. So therefore, halacha lemaisa, the Gemara says, that if you have a situation where the man, right, call him Reuven, is married to Rachel, right, but so obviously if Reuven himself is immoral, the waters aren't going to work. But even if Reuven's children are immoral, the water's not going to work either. Because if there is immorality in the children, it seems to be the Gemara saying that stems in some way from the parents. You might have thought that it's only if the husband is immoral with adultery that those salted waters won't work. But maybe if he just commits immorality with a single woman, maybe again the water should work. Tashma, ki heim im hazonos yivardu v'im akdeshos yizbachu. Pasuk says that he's with Zona. So we'll say, so again, remember, the harlot was often a single woman, but Lameis, again, he's still held accountable for that. My va'am lo yavin yilabit am Rabbi Elazar am Rabbi Navi Yisrael im atem akpidon asmechem mayim bod kinishoseichem. The Navi says to Klal Yisrael, speaking to the husbands, if you are makbid with yourself, i.e. if you are careful to be a moral individual, then the waters will work on your wives. Ve'im lav, ein hamayim bod kinishoseichem. But if you are not careful with morality, then ultimately the waters will not work on your wife. So we'll say this idea of reciprocity, that a husband, we'll say, which again is actually an incredible yisod in marriage as well, which is essentially saying what? That Allah Maisa, don't hold your spouse to a higher standard that you hope to that don't hold your spouse to a higher standard. Don't hold your spouse to a higher standard for which you hold yourself. Okay, that wasn't the right English, but you understand. One more time, let's try that again. Don't hold someone else to a higher standard than you hold yourself to. That's it. Right? So I'll say, so the mice again, so in other words, halacha la maisa, you want the war, right? You're upset because you think your wife is committing adultery is immoral. So that's fine. What level of morality do you hold yourself to? If you hold yourself to the same level of morality, the waters will check your wife. You don't hold yourself to the same levels of morality, the waters won't check it. I will say, but again, is that not a yisod for marriage? How many times does it happen that there's a shalom bayis problem? A husband gets upset at a wife gets upset at a husband because it's something this. You right? You think your spouse didn't come through for you in a certain circumstance. Well, do you hold yourself to that same standard? Right? Do you get upset about something? Do you hold yourself to that same standard? Whatever standard you're going to hold your spouse to, make sure you hold yourself to that same standard as well. Incredible. Mishnah Rabbu Baalei Hana'a. Now we kind of talk about other things over here. This is really incredible Gemara. Once Baalei Hana'a proliferate. Now, Bosei, now what are Baalei Hana'a? Baalei Hana'a are people ultimately, again, who all they want out of life is comfort. They just want to be comfortable. You say anything to yourself, that doesn't sound so bad, right? What's so bad about that? So I say, Balyana, but again, you're going to see what the problem is. Balyana, all they want out of life is comfort. Once there was a proliferation of Balyana, this Afsu Hadinin, right? Ultimately, again, justice became perverted. Now, we'll say, or Halacha became perverted. Now, what's the Pshat? Take a look at Rashi. This is Rashi on the right hand side. This Afsu Hadinin, Rashi says, Timitoch Shem Balyana, Ein Matrichinan Asma La'ayin Bedin. But say, since people became, so even talking about Talmid Yechachamim, since people became fully focused, ultimately, again, just on pleasure. Now, again, I want to point out over here, this isn't even illicit pleasure. This is just the focus of life becomes my comfort. So therefore, they didn't push themselves, they didn't exert themselves to find out the true halacha, the isra, the hetar, the horos, the tzibor. And we talk kach, this kalkalu ma'aseyem, the cheben shekein, in la'chavish baruch hu, na'chaz rak ba'olam, ve'en olam ha'noach lo. So I will say, this is incredible. This is actually talking about the Talmidei Chachamim, where Talmidei Chachamim became focused just on comfort. Just on comfort. I will say, this is an incredible yisod. If your goal in life is comfort, then what are you not going to do? You're not going to exert yourself. I say, is this not one of our greatest challenges, right? I'd like to be comfortable. I'd like to be pampered. The problem is with that, I lose the concept of exertion. So once a person loses the concept of exertion, that means Talmidei Chachamim are not exerting themselves to find out that true halacha either. Well, if you're not exerting yourself to find out the true halacha, then what? Then everything becomes corrupted. Then halacha becomes corrupted. Then suddenly you're not delivering proper halachic judgments. Then as kachalu hamaisim, as a result, ultimately actions become perverted. Ve'noach ba'olam. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu finds no pleasure or no nachas in this world. They both say such an incredible yisod. It's nice to have a comfortable life, but comfort cannot be the goal we are aspiring to. That can't be the goal. That can't be the goal. It could be something nice, right? Everybody likes a little bit of comfort in life. But if your goal in life, if your aspiration in life is comfort, then at the end of the day, you lose the concept of tircha, of exerting yourself. And once I lose the drive to exert, then greatness is no longer within my grasp. The Gemara goes back to Mishra'orai Panabadin, when ultimately, it was a proliferation of judges who favored litigants, Bata lo saguru, upasak lo sakiru, uparku ol shamayim. They literally again offloaded the yoke of heaven. Vinasnu aleim ol basar adam, and it was replaced ultimately again with the yoke of fear of man. Mishrabaloch shedechishos bedin. Shabbos say ultimately again when there was a proliferation of those who whispered to the judges. Shabbos say Rashi points out over here that what this was is sometimes the lawyers, right, would whisper to the judges to try to skew the case in their favor. So when ultimately, again, there was a proliferation of this, Rabbi Char and Afi Yisrael, there was an intensity of anger at Klal Yisrael, because Rabbi gets upset when there is a perversion of justice. V'nistalka Shechina Mishum, right, Mishum Shinemar, U'bekerab Elokim Yishbot. So good, and the Shechina departed. Mishurabu Acharei Bitzam Libam, Holeich. So we'll say when there was a proliferation of people who literally again followed Betza. Betza is bribery. So ultimately, Rabu Omrim L'ra Tov L'Tov Ra. There was a proliferation of people who said, bad is good and good is bad. So we'll say, because bribery totally blinds the eyes of judgment. Yishrabu Omrim L'ra Tov L'Tov Ra. When there was a group of people who were no longer able to see their sin, good and bad. So hi Ba'olam. There was a lot of woe, a lot of misery in the world. Mishrab Moshe Harok, I will say when again, Moshe Harok are people who spit in public. People who spit in public, there's a gaiva. That's a representation of arrogance. So when there was a proliferation of arrogant people, Rabu Hayihirim Venismatu Atamidim. So ultimately, again, that means there's more arrogance. And when there's more arrogance, there are less Talmidei Chachamim. I will say, what's the combination? To become a Talmud Chacham, what core midah do you need? Humility. Because without humility, I don't think there's anything to learn. If there's nothing to learn, there's no Talmud Chachamim. And I will say, watch this. V'atorah chozeres alomdeh. And the Torah was looking for someone to learn it. Isn't that incredible? The Torah itself was looking for someone to learn Torah. Mishrabe Yehirim, Hisklu b'nos Yisrael y'nasele Yehirim. When there was a proliferation of arrogant people, Jewish women were marrying arrogant men. She'enu dorenu roa ela lifnim. Shabbos say, ela lepanim. This is incredible. Because our generation only sees the external. So what happened? The guys were presenting themselves, right, in an arrogant way, making themselves look, right, all accomplished, all wonderful. The women kind of bought into it, because sometimes our generation only sees things superficially. Very profound statement. Ini, is that so? Vamarmar, hayman de miyaher afila inshe besi lo makabel. It was someone who's arrogant. Even his own family doesn't like him. So why would it be that women would marry these men? Shene emar gvar yihir v'lo yinava afilu b'nava shalo meikara kafza alau l'sof misalai. In the beginning, women would marry these men because they'd be very taken by the false persona. Then once they got to know them, they wouldn't like them very much. Mishe rabu matilim. So I just want to point out, the Gemara is often also telling you the unraveling of society that was happening, that led up to the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, post-destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. What you're seeing over here is just the unraveling of the very fabric of society. When there was a proliferation of people, judges, who gave over their money to be managed by Balabatim. So what does this mean? So if you're a judge, and you hand over your portfolio to be managed by someone, what's going to happen when that person shows up in your courtroom? Right? You're going to be biased. That's what it's saying. That when there was a proliferation of judges who gave over their money management to their balabatim, rabba hashochad, so obviously there was a lot more bribery, vatias mishpat, and skewing of judgment, upas katova, and good stopped. So you see a very strong connection between a willingness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to dwell in this world with proper judgment. Remember, Chosamo Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu Emes, the signet of Hashem is truth. So when there is proper judgment and proper justice, the Shekhinah is present. When there is a perversion of truth, judgment, and justice, the Shekhinah leaves. Misherabu, Mekablani Tovascha, or Mechazkani Tovascha. So I will say, ultimately, again, when there was... So we'll say ultimately again when there were a proliferation of judges who accepted favors and ultimately again held others in favor. Rabu Ishayasha Beinav Yasa, so people started doing whatever they wanted. Shvelin Hugbu Vagvam Hushpulu Umahusa Azla Finovla. Mishrabu Tsaria, so once again, breakdown of judicial system. Misharabu Tsaria Ayn Vitarfe Teref. I will say when there was a proliferation of stinginess and thievery, Rabu Ma'am Se'alei V'kofzi Adai Me'lahavos. Ultimately, I will say, so what ended up happening? People became stingier and refused to lend money. Va'avra Masha Kasu B'Torah, Hisham Lecha, Mishrabu Neti Askara, when people walked around with outstretched necks, U'mashakros Inayim, and winking. So this is referring to women. Before we're speaking about arrogance on the part of men, here this is a reference to arrogance on the part of women, but the arrogance manifested itself in flirtatious behavior. So the stretching out of the neck is considered to be a flirtatious, right? Winking is a flirtatious behavior. Rabu Maim Hamarim. So ultimately, again, there was a proliferation of sotas. Ela Shepasku. But then ultimately, again, it's kind of like a cyclical thing. Once there's a proliferation of sotos, ultimately, again, the water stopped working. Shrab Mekabim Matanos. We'll say when there were more judges who accepted bribes, accepted gifts, ultimately, again, lifespans were diminished. So we'll say it's incredible. Once again, when there was a proliferation of arrogance, Zuchuchei HaLev, once again, is arrogance. Rabu Machlokes B'Yisrael. Isn't that incredible? We'll say, why? Because remember, with arrogance is the antithesis of humility. When there's no humility, there's no willingness to learn. When there's no willingness to learn, you think you know everything. When you think you know everything, that is the recipe for machlokes. Misherabu Talmidei Shammai v'Hillel Shloshim Shu Kol Tzarkan. When there was a proliferation of students of Shammai and Hillel who did not properly learn from their Rebbeim, Rabu Machlokes B'Yisrael. There was Ro Machlokes in Klal Yisrael, V'Nasu Kishtei Toros. And it made, so to say, there were some points where the Machlokes between Beisham and Beisrael were so intense that it looked like Klal Yisrael had two separate Toros. Mishirabu Mekabli Tzedakim in Ha'ovdei Kochavim, Ha'yi Yisrael L'mala V'Heim L'mata, Yisrael L'fnim V'Heim L'achar. But it is incredible. When there was a proliferation of Jews who accepted tzedakah from non-Jewish sources. Essentially, what ended up happening? The nations of the world were on top, and ultimately, the Klal Yisrael on the bottom. I will say, This, in general, by the way, is a fascinating discussion about the concept of accepting charity from non-Jewish sources. It's a big discussion in halacha, but over here you clearly see that the Gemara felt that once there was this proliferation, it puts Klal Yisrael at a disadvantage. Incredible. Mishames Yosi ben Yoezer. So the Mishnah said, when Yosi ben Yoezer died, batal ha'ashkolos. The ashkolos were no longer. My ashkolos. What does that mean? Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, ish shahakol bo. It's a contraction. Ashkolos means a person who possesses everything. Look at the last Rashi on the daf in the left-hand side. Torah ba'amita ve'in dofi v'shicha machlokes. So we'll say Eshkolos is a person who possesses everything. Complete Torah, but the Masha points out also complete Midos. Here Rabbi say, being with Talmud Chacham is a package. Your Torah knowledge is part of that package, but your Midos are just as important of a package, a part of that package. So Eshkolos is Ish Shakol Bar. We'll say, what a beautiful compliment. The man who has everything. Who is the man who has everything? The man who has Torah, the man who has mitzvahs. So the Gemara goes back to Yochanan Kohen Gadol. Have your adas, Meiser. So let's remember again, Yochanan Kohen Gadol stopped vidui Meiser. He stopped the Meiser confession. My time, Rabbi Yosef Yechanina, Levi Sheinosnin Osa Kitikuna. So Rabbi Yosef, why? Because in the days of Yochanan Kohen Gadol, Rabbi Yosef, they had stopped giving tithes in the right way. What had happened? So the Gemara says, Rachmana Amar. So the Torah says, Diyavi Lelevim. Was the top of Memches. Memches Mandalaf. Okay, not bad. Memches Mandalaf. 48a. But remember again, what does the Torah say? Truma goes to the Kohen. Meiser Rishon goes to the Levi. Now, but say, remember again, they stopped giving Meiser Rishon to the Levium. When did they stop giving Meiser Rishon to the Levium? At the times of Ezra, when they came back to rebuild the second Beis Hamikdash. Why did they stop giving Meiser Rishon to the Levium? Why? Because the Levium did not return with Ezra. As a penalty to the Levim, they stopped giving Meiser Rishon to the Levim. So what do they do? Va'anan, top of Memches, 48a, first line. Va'anan, kayavinu lekohanim. We give our Meiser Rishon to the Kohanim as a penalty. So therefore, Yochanan Kohen Gadol said, the only time you do vidui Meiser, right? Remember again, because vidui Meiser says, asisi, Kechol mitzvoscha, right? Or asisi kasher tzivisani. I've done everything you've asked me to do. Well, if you're not giving the Meiser Rishon to the Levi, you're not doing it exactly as you're supposed to be doing. And therefore, again, he said, better to stop the vidui Meiser. Amrei Shlakish, Rav Shlakish said, I'm sorry, velo di ashar Meisers. So, okay, so leaving out Meiser Rishon, but you're doing everything right. So why not at least say a partial vidui Meiser, right, for the tithes you are giving out correctly. Amrei Shlakish, kol bayis in misvada al Meiser Rishon, shuv in misvada ashar Meisers. Because any home in which you are not properly dispersing Meiser Rishon, you don't do vidui Meiser for anything else. My time, huh? What's the reason for that? Amar Abaye, holu pasach ba kasa tila. Ultimately, again, since Meiser Rishon is the first tithe that's mentioned, so therefore, if you're not doing that one appropriately, now, and I just want to point out, they weren't giving Meiser Rishon appropriately, but that was by design. Just want to point out, this was not sinful behavior. Ezra already decreed, Leviim, don't get Meiser Rishon. Yochanan Kohen Gadol said, that's fine, I understand why we're doing it, but if we're not giving out Meiser Rishon, we also can't do vidui Meiser. So I say this sounds like that although they were not going ahead and giving Meiser Rishon to the Levi, that they were still separating it and giving it to the Kohen. Is that so? So the Gemara says, "Tanya afa af hu bitel es avidui the gozer al admai." So what's Yochanan Kohen Gadol stopped the vidui, and he also was gozer al admai. Now, so what does he gozer al admai? Gozer al admai means any time that you bought produce someone Ama Aretz, you had to tithe it. Lefi Shashar Pachal Gvul Aretz Yisrael, because ultimately Yochanan Kohen Gadol sent messengers throughout all of Aretz Yisrael. V'rashim Afishin Ela Truma Gidola Bilvan, and these are people who were only separating a Truma Gidola, which are both say, Umayser Rishon, Umayser Sheni. And when it came to Meiser Rishon and Meiser Sheni, Miksasan Ma'asrin, or Miksasan Ein Ma'asrin, some people were separating it, some people weren't separating it. So we'll say, what do you see from here? It's not the pshat that they just weren't giving Meiser Rishon to the Levi, but rather what? It sounds like some good number of them weren't separating out Meiser Rishon at all. Amar Lehem, Banai, Bova Amar Lehem, Kishim Shetruma Gidol Yesh Ba'avam Misa, and Yochanan Kohen Gadol said the message, my children, the same way that failure to separate out Truma Gedola, which is the portion to the Kohen carries of the death penalty, Kach Truma Smeiser, V'tevel Yeshban Avon Misa. So too, again, consumption of Truma, right, failure to separate out Truma Smeiser, and failure to go ahead and rectify Tevel by separating out Meiserishin and Meiserishini, also carries with it a death penalty. Therefore, Amar v'hiskin lahem yochanan kohen gadol gadol mida takana halkech peres ma'am aretz mafresh men ma'isrishon ma'isrisheni. If you purchase for this one ama aretz, you must separate again, or you must separate ma'isrishon and ma'isrisheni. Ma'isrishon mafresh v'mena trumas ma'iser, and once you separate out ma'isrishon, you have to separate out trumas ma'iser from that. The nosna lekohen, give it to the kohen, or ma'isrisheni ola va'ochla b'Yerushalayim, and ultimately ma'isrisheni is yours in Yerushalayim. When it comes to Maiser Rishon and Maiser Ani, ultimately again, the burden of proof ultimately again is upon the individual who's coming to claim it to prove that it has not been separated. So we'll say, what do you see from here? You see from here that they weren't separating out Maiser Rishon, right? They weren't separating it. To which the Gemara says, you're right. Tarte Tegin. In reality, there were two takanas. There are two enactments, right? Bitel vidui dechaverim. Ultimately, Yochanan Kohen Gadol was mevatel vidui meister of chaver. Let's remember again, who are chaverim? Chaverim are people who tithe properly. So for the people who are properly tithing, separating out everything, Yochanan Kohen Gadol says, don't do vidui meister. Don't do the confession that you tithe everything. Why can't you do that? Because we're not giving Maaser Rishon to the Levium, so therefore you can't say that you've done everything appropriately. The Gazra al Dmashal Ame Haaretz, and he also instituted that when it came to the produce of Ame Haaretz, that ultimately again you have to retithe that when you purchase it from them, because they weren't tithing at all. Two separate takaras. Incredible. Afu bitas ma'orim. So remember again, Yochanan Kohen Gadol also was mabata li ma'orim. People say, what's ma'orim? My ma'orim. Amarach ba b'chol yom v'yom shayu omdim levim al duchon v'omrim ura lama tishan Hashem. So also listen to this. So what would happen? Every day the levim would get up. The duchon, remember, is their platform. And what would they sing? They would call out and they would say, wake up, Hashem, why are you sleeping? So Amar Lahem Chiyeshin Lefnei Amakum. So Yochanan Kohen Gadol said, "Does a Kadosh Baruch Hu sleep?" Right? V'halok Varnemar Hinei Lo'ino V'lo'ishan Shomer Yisrael. He does not sleep. He does not slumber, guardian of Israel. Ella Bizman She Yisrael Shuyin B'tzar V'Odikochavim Benachos V'Shalva L'Kach Neamar Ura Lamatishan Hashem. Rather, we'll say the pasuk in Tehillim is referring to a time when Klal Yisrael is in existential difficulty, and the nations of the world are in tranquility. But Rabbi Sir Yochanan Kohen Gadol stopped the practice of saying this. Why? Because during his days, Klal Yisrael was in a state of tranquility. So he was saying, it doesn't make sense to say the pasuk of Ura Lama Tishan Hashem, Hashem, awaken, why do you slumber? It doesn't make sense to say that pasuk when Klal Yisrael is in a state of tranquility and shalom. Incredible. That's a nokfim. He also went ahead and stopped the nokfim. Who are the Nokfim? Rosh is fascinating. My Nokfim, I'm Rav Yudam Shmuel, Shem Misartin Le'egel Ben Karnov, Kedish Yipol Dam Be'enov. Supposed to listen to this. We'll say, this is actually good to know. When you're bringing a carbon, we'll say, imagine for a moment you're bringing a carbon, right? You're bringing a big, zaftig animal, right? Mamashalikas, right? So what's the problem? We'll say, how do you shecht an animal? You got to get it on its side. We'll say, you ever try to get an animal on its side? Ever try that? Right? No, but one could imagine it's not poshet. Right, so we'll say, no, it's not just like, I'll come here, little shefa, like, you know, lay down on your side, right? Right, let me make it easy for me to shecht you. You have to get the animal on the side. So the animal's not going down easy. So these two interesting practices, what they would do is, they would cut the animal between its eyes, the blood would get into the animal's eyes, blinded, and essentially the animal wouldn't realize what was happening, it'd be easier to tip the animal over. That, right? So I'll say, ultimately, again, I'll see you, batal, mishum damech se kimuma. So Yochanan, ultimately, again, Yochanan Kohen Gadol stopped this practice. Why did he stop the practice? Because it looked like you were making a mum. Now, we'll say, it's not a mum, right? A cut on an animal is not a mum. Ultimately, again, it's only certain types of cuts in certain places. So, but it looks like a mum. So because it looks like a mum, therefore, again, he stopped this practice. So, we'll say, so what happens? Masnisatana. So, shayuchovtin also a makalos kedek sha'osin also thiavodos kochavim. So, we'll say, first wide line and chesem dalef. Others say, no, it was different. They wouldn't lacerate the animal. Instead, what would they do? They'd hit the animal with staffs, right? With a stick to kind of get it on his side. And he said, Bosei, this is what was often done in idolatrous practice, to subdue the animal to shechter as well. Amar Lohayim, Yochanan says to them, Ad masai tem achilin nevelos l'mizbeach. How long are you going to go and offer up nevelos? Rabbi said, now a nevela is an animal that dies without shechita. So he says, how long are you going to offer up nevelos? Nevelos hashachet lehu. So what do you mean nevelos? They're shechting it. Ela trefos. Shema nikav krum shalmoach amar viskin lohen tabaos bekarka. So he said, listen to this. So what he was concerned about is, don't hit the animal, because he said, if you hit the animal, then what? There's a real possibility you're going to make that animal into a treifa. To a treifa. So we'll say, so Yochanan Kohen Gadol was mevatel both of these practices. Laceration to blind it and hitting it with a stick. But what did he do, Rabbi Osai? He installed rings onto the floor of the Beis HaMikdash. So remember again, we know that there are rings on the floor, movable rings. So if you got the animal to its side, you slid the head into the ring, you brought the ring down on the animal, that kept the animal in place. So that way, again, the animal was immobile and you weren't struggling or wrestling with the animal during Shechita. Incredible. Adam of Hayapadish Makib Yerushalayim. So we'll say all of his days, or actually until his days, the hammer was clanking in Yerushalayim. What is this talking about? Becholol Shamoid. So we'll say, listen to this. An Cholamayid. So again, you are allowed to do work that is either necessary ultimately, again, for the Yomtiv itself or a Davar Ha'avod. Or something ultimately, again, that is a loss. So I will say, generally, blacksmith work, smith work, was something that had to get done. So people would hear the clanking of hammers. The problem was, when people heard the clanking of hammers, so unknowledgeable people would just assume that what? Any type of work is permitted on Chol HaMoed. So Yochanan Kohen Gadol stopped the clanking of hammers on Chol HaMoed in order not to mislead the public to think that any type of labor is permitted. And lastly, Kol Yamav Lo Haya Adam Tzarech L'Shalah Dmai Kida Amar. And I will say, in his days, no one had to ask about Dmai. Why? Because as we just said, remember, Yochanan Kohen Gadol made two takhanas. Takhana number one was that people who tithe shouldn't say Vidui Meiser because they were not properly distributing Meiser Rishon as the takhana of Ezra. And number two, Yochanan Kohen Gadol said, whenever you buy produce from an Amma Aretz, you must tithe it. You must tithe it. So we'll say, therefore, again, no one had any shilas anymore about Demai, because they were tithing everything. We'll say, Mishnah. Mem Chesam and Aleph, third wide line in Mishnah. Mishabat la Sanhedrin, batal shir beis HaMishnah. So what's the interesting case, or interesting statement? When the Sanhedrin stopped, batal la Sanhedrin means the Sanhedrin was no longer active. Batal shir beis HaMishnah. So Chazal, there was no longer music in the house of celebration. I will say, now this is actually a great subject to delve into, which we're not going to today, right? But Lamaisa, again, just a fascinating discussion about prohibition of music after the Sanhedrin stopped functioning. So literally, again, sheer song or music was batal beis hamishtos. So I will say, now there is a machlokes, what does beis hamishtos mean? Right? Is that a celebration? What kind of celebration? Is that a chasana? Is that a non-kiddusha celebration? What is it? So again, a lot of discussion. We'll get more into it. Shneimar b'shelo yishtu yayin b'shemesu nevim arishonim. When the early prophets died, batlu urim v'tumim. We'll say the urim v'tumim stopped working. We'll say, remember, what are the urim v'tumim? Kohen wore a choshen. Choshen was the breastplate. The breastplate had 12 stones with the name of the shvatim written on it. There was a fold, the fabric fold behind the choshen. Inside of that was the 72-letter name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That was slid into the fold. That essentially worked, for lack of a better term, as like a battery for the choshen. That's how Klal Yisrael, the Kohen Gadol, the Melech, was able to go ahead and dialogue with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They were able to ask questions, and the answer from HaKadosh Baruch Hu came through the Urim to him. The letters lit up. So I'll say, once the Nevi'im Rishonim passed away, the Urim Atum stopped functioning. Mishkar Beis HaMikdash, when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, Batal HaShamir, the Shamir stopped functioning. We'll see who the Shamir is. V'Nofes Tzufim. And Nofes Tzufim stopped. Pasku Anshei Amana, men of truth, no longer existed. M'shene Emar, Hoshia Hashem Ki Gamar Chas. Shimon Yel Omer, Hey Rabbi Yishua, Miyom Shkar Beis HaMikdash, from the day the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, Ein Yom She'in Boklala. So what a profound thing. From the day the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, there is no day that doesn't have curses associated with it. V'yarat ha'lebracha, the dew no longer falls with blessing. V'nital tamaperos, and the taste of fruit is not the same. Rabbi Yossi Omer, afnital shumunaperos, even the fat of the fruit, we'll say that sounds like the ability for fruit to satiate, is no longer present. Rabbi Shimon al-Azra Omer, habracha nitla Sorry, hatahara nitla, right? So, right, when ultimately, again, when there's no tara, ultimately, again, that removed flavor and scent. Hamasros natlu es shuman hadagan. So, ultimately, again, we'll say failure to separate tithes took away the fat from the grain. Vecham omrim haznus vakshafem kilu es hakol. So, immorality, sorcery, took away everything. So, we'll say this idea over here, as you see, with the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, not only did we lose a structure, but certain things have been removed from the world. The world is not the same in the absence of the Mikdash. The Gemara says, "Umimai the Mishabat la Sanhedrin siv." So I'll say, so now remember again, the Gemara quoted the pasuk of Ba'a of Bashir lo yishtu yayim, with song they will no longer drink wine. So the Gemara says, how did that pasuk is referring to that once the Beis HaMikdash, sorry, that once the Sanhedrin is no longer in session, there's no more Shira. So Amr Avuna Breid Rav Yoshua the Amr Kra Zekinim Mishar Shavsu Bachori Minaginasam, because the pasuk says the elders no longer sit in the gate. So the elders no longer sitting in the gate. That's a reference to the Sanhedrin. Amr Rav Odna Dishama Zamra, an ear that hears music, ultimately Tiakir should be uprooted. Amarava, Zamra Bebesa, Chorabesa. If there's music in a home, there is destruction in the home. Shinemar, Kol Yishore Bechalon Charav Besaf, Ki Arza Ara, Mai Ki Arza Ara, Amrabitzchak, Bayis Hamasubach Ba'arazim, Irhu, Ela Filu Bayis Hamasubach Ba'arazim. Even if a home, literally again, is fortified with siege, in other words, a strong home, Misra, if there's music inside of it, ultimately again, it will be uprooted. Amravashi says, so we'll say, I just want to point out, like I said, we're not doing justice to this discussion about music, but clearly what you begin to see is that with the Sanhedrin no longer in session and the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, Chazal put certain restrictions on music. Now, what type of restrictions and what type of music? So that is a much bigger discussion as well. Again, maybe we'll put it on our list. Maybe if we have time tomorrow, Meretz Hashem, we'll get into this a little bit more. So, Amar Rav Ashi says, Shema Mina, Ki Maschil Chorva B'Seifa Maschil. What do you see from here? That will say, when destruction happens in a home, destruction begins from the threshold. He'll say, now, by the way, what a profound statement. What does that mean? When destruction begins in a home, destruction begins in the threshold. He'll say, what's the undoing of a home? What's the undoing of a home? The undoing of a home has to do with the influences you allow past the threshold. That's what it means. When destruction begins, it begins at the threshold. We'll say, what do we allow into our homes? It's such an important, what reading materials, what channels, what music, what influences do we allow into our homes? You know, sometimes we wonder why our kids are acting a certain way, why they behave a certain way, why they talk a certain way. Sometimes I have to ask myself, what am I allowing them to be exposed to? What am I allowing them to watch? What am I allowing them to listen to? I will say, you know, again, music, we're talking about music now. It's very hard. It's very, in other words, society has become so immoral that, again, you turn on the radio, I will say, and a person does not know. You're not listening to the love ballads of old, right? You're listening mamish to prisos. To literally to priests, to immorality, to violence. And then we wonder why our children are impacted, affected. Of course, whatever influences you allow over your threshold, that is going to impact the mishpacha that you are creating. Incredible Yisosh. Nemar chere b'safi, b'yisei v'hacha. We'll say other possibilities. Shaya yukas shar. Amar ma'ar ravashi. L'didi chazili, u'min alach kitura. One time I saw a shade, right, going on a rampage in a home, or at the threshold of a home, and it looked like an ox, like a goring ox. Amar afuna, zamra dinagdi vidibakri shari. Certain types of music is permitted. So we'll say, for example, zamra de Gandhi. So we'll say, Rashi says, zamra de Gandhi is moshe sinos. There are people who pull boats, right? I guess like in shallow water, they were pulling it on the banks. So they used to sing to create like a tempo. That type of song is fine because it's only there to give, allow them to be zoris, to be alacritous in their work. Udabaki Rashi says over here is songs that the farmers use when plowing. Apparently, again, if you sing to the oxen when they're plowing, it calms them, it soothes them, and they do a better job. Okay, that's permitted. Degar di asir, but apparently, again, the weaver's song is asir because that song ultimately, again, was schok, Rashi says. It was jocular. Ravuna battled Zimra. Kamei Avzi was supposed to say Ravuna in his times. He stopped Zimra. He stopped music. He was supposed to say Pashtos. What I was referring to really over here is music, not kiddusha music, right? Not ultimately again music that's holy, right? Not the music ultimately again that's meant to inspire, but the music often that's just meant, you know, in more joking or jocular or levity or scope type of ways. So he was mevatel it, and what happened? Kamei Avzi bezuz. You were able to buy 100 geese with a zuz. We'll say that's a good thing. That's a good thing. In other words, that there was such plentiful food, right? There was such plentiful meat that you were able to buy a lot of meat for a relatively low amount of money. And 100 saw of wheat with those zuz. Rav Chista did not enforce his ban on music, and he buy avza bezuzah v'lo mishtachin. They couldn't even find one goose ultimately again for a zuz. So I will say, what that also tells you is there is a direct correlation between material success and morality, right? When society holds itself, when community holds itself to a higher moral standard and to a higher spiritual standard, then ultimately, again, there is a bracha in their material life. Conversely, so we're seeing this now in Shara Bitachon. Conversely, ultimately, when society does not hold itself to a higher standard, there is a degradation in the standard of material life as well. Incredible. I'm Rabbi Yosef. Zamri Gavri Va'ani Nashi. Let's listen to this. What about a mixed choir? A mixed choir. So let's say, here it is. Listen to this. If you have ultimately, again, a choir where the men are singing and the women are answering, so the women are like the chorus, so prisusa, that's prisus. We'll say, what's the good English word for prisus? Immorality. Right? Immorality. Right? Prisus. Immoral behavior. Immoral behavior. Zamri nashi v'ani gavri. But if you have a choir, we'll say, where ultimately, again, the men are, right, the women are singing, and the men are the chorus, that's even worse. Ke'ishbarim. That's like a fire in a haystack. Or as Rabbi say, what that means is, Rashi points out over here, the people singing the chorus always have to pay attention, greater attention, to the people singing, I don't know, what's the thing that's not called the chorus? The song, right? The song. Why? Because the chorus has to know when to answer. So if you have men singing and women answering, maybe there's a chance that the men aren't paying as much attention to the chorus. When the women are singing and the men are the chorus, the men are even more attentive to women singing. I will say, these are important things. There's an Issur of Kalisha. The Issur of Kalisha says a man cannot listen to a woman singing. I will say, it's not some outdated halacha that no longer applies. It's in Shulchan Aruch. The fact that we think that sometimes, that was for past generations, but for us, we don't have to be as careful, whether it's a mixed choir, whether it's, we'll say, these are important things. And Chazal puts it in here because Chazal says, if we're careful with morality, to the obviously, again, we're human beings, but if we're careful with morality to the best of our ability, then we'll say that creates a fabric of society that allows for material success as well. Whereas if we take liberties, ultimately, again, with basic aspects of morality, then Lamaisa can understand that as individuals and as a society, it negatively impacts us. All right, so much more to say about all of these things, but we'll go weiter. So the Gemara goes, Lamaisa, you know, we'll say, what does it matter? So we'll say, so this is interesting. So what it's saying is, right, a mixed choir is bad. Mixed choir is bad. But if it's men singing the chorus and women sing, I'm sorry, men singing and women singing the chorus, that's bad. But what's even worse, is women singing and men singing the chorus. So the Gemara says, I don't know, they're both bad. What does it matter if one's better, one's worse? Or one's worse, one's even more worse? So the Gemara says, Rabbi, say, if you have an opportunity to stop one of them, which one should you stop first? Okay. Right? Sometimes you can only, right, you can only object to so many things. Right? So if you can only object to one thing, which one should you object to? Object to the women singing the song and the men singing the chorus. That's even worse. Okay. Rabbi Yochanan, Kol Shose Ba'arba Minei Zemer, maybe Chamish Parnas Galam. We'll say, anyone who imbibes, literally again, in four different types of music, brings five different punishments to the world. Shene Amar, Hoy Mashkimei Boker, Sheikha Yerdofa Me'achari Ben Eshef, Yayin Yad Likeim, Faya Kinor, Venevel, Tov, Chalil, V'yayin Mishteim, V'espal Hashem Lo Yabitu. Maksivach, what does he say afterwards? Lachin Gola Amim Mibli Das, Shegarmin Golos the Olam. So the Gemara says, Ukvodo, Masar Hashem Avin, Ra'av the Olam, V'amonot Tzacha, Samy Shegarmin the Tarsh Tshachim Lom Das. So we'll say again, theme over here, those who go ahead and engage in frivolous music. We'll say, so again, not kiddusha music, frivolous music. ultimately, again, and couple that with alcohol, bring all types of detrimental things to the world. So the Gemara goes weiter. Vayesach Adam vayesh pa'ish shegam shiflus l'sono shal kadosh baruch hu. They cause kadosh baruch hu kiviyachol to become lowly in the world. Ve'ina ish ela kadosh baruch hu shenemar ish Hashem milchama. Ve'ina gavam tishavelna. They make the eyes of the great ones low. Shegam shiflus shay Yisrael. They cause lowliness for Klal Yisrael. Maksiv acharav. What does it say after? It will say, Amud Beis l'chein. I'm sorry, we're going fast. The Yerchiva Sh'ol Nafsha Ufarapia L'chok The Yaret Hadara V'Amona Shina Olava. So we'll say, I just want to point out, what's the takeaway from all this? And it's really incredible. We'll say, if you think about it, it's pretty intense wording for music, right? We're not talking about over here like the commission of any specific Aveira. Rather, what are we talking about over here? We're talking about music without meaning, right? Frivolous type of music coupled with alcohol. So I'll say, so what's the Aveira? There's no specific Aveira. But I will say, all of us know what music without Kiddusha, right, coupled with alcohol, Kiddusha, by the way, we're literally learning this now in our Thursday night Chabura, in B'nei Machshava Tova. Literally, again, for the last two Shem, the Piagesta has been speaking about the power of music, the power of music of Kiddusha. So I will say, here, what the Gemara is highlighting over here is, a person in the same way that music has power to move us in the realm of Kiddusha in ways that other things cannot, music without Kiddusha, coupled with alcohol, has the ability to fundamentally undermine the entire spiritual fabric of society. And when that happens, everyone is degraded. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is degraded, Klal Yisrael is degraded, and the very moral fabric of society begins there. I will say, incredible. I just want to point out, sometimes when we speak about, you know, non-Jewish music, and again, we think that non-Jewish music doesn't have, so what's the big deal? It doesn't have an impact. And I will say, it does have an impact. It does have an impact, especially contemporarily, where again, so much of the lyrical content is antithetical to what we believe in, antithetical to the values. And I will say, especially again, as adults, that's one thing. But as children, do anything and everything to prevent your children from listening to non-Jewish music. I'm not really a kanai about many things. But the last thing I will say, the messages that their pure little neshamas imbibe without even realizing. Because sometimes, you know, you listen to music, you don't even realize what the words are. And these messages that are antithetical to everything we believe in are seeping into those beautiful little neshamas and impacting them in ways that we can't even begin to measure. Something that seems so innocuous, yet again, the Gemara telling us could have such a terrible detrimental effect. The Gemara goes weiter. When the early prophets passed away, so ultimately, early prophets is David, Shmuel, and Shlomo. Rav Nachman and Arav made David, Zimnin, Salak, Vizimnin, Lo Salak. So I will say, now remember again, just to give you the context, this was saying over here, when the Nevi'im Rishonim passed away, so halacha lemaisa, the Urim and Tumim stopped working. Urim and Tumim stopped working. So the Gemara says, in the days of the early prophets, made David, sometimes the Urim and Tumim worked, sometimes it didn't work. Shari Sha'al Tzadok Va'al Salo, Shalav Yasser Va'al Salo, Tzadok asked, Tzadok HaKohen asked, and it worked, right? Av Yasser asked, and it didn't work. Shene Emar, Va'al Av Yasser, Masid Rav Bar Shmuel, Va'i Lidrosh, Va'i Lidrosh Elokim, Koyme Zechariah, Hamevin Bir Osa Elokim, My Love Urim V'Tumim. Now I will say, now remember again, the Pasuk says over here, by Zechariah, the Urim V'Tumim was still working. Zechariah is certainly much later on, and yet the Urim V'Tumim was still working. Lo B'Nevi'im. No. It means by Zechariah, when he asked, he wasn't inquiring of God through the Urim V'Tumim, rather he was inquiring of HaKadosh Baruch Hu ultimately through prophets. Tashma. V'Shechar Beis HaMikdash Rishon, Batlu Arim Migrash, Upaskur of Tramas, when the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, it's incredible. Arim Migrash, Shabbos, were the open areas reserved for the Levi'im. There were no longer any open areas. Upaskur Urim V'Tumim. The Urim V'Tumim stopped working. Again, now the Gemara is attributing the timeline. Urim V'Tumim stopped working by the first Beis HaMikdash. Upasak Melech Mibes David. And I will say, at the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, there was no longer a Davidic king. I will say, what do you do with the fact that it says Hatir Shasa, who's Ezra, will say, ultimately said they will not eat from the Kodesh HaKadoshim until the coin gets up for the Urim V'Tumim, which sounds like the Urim V'Tumim did exist even after the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. explain that pasuk. Amar lo ki adam sheomer lechaveru at sheyichu meisiv yavo Mashiach ben David. He wasn't saying the pasuk. He was saying it as an anticipatory statement that when the urim v'tumim will once again work. Ala Amar Rav Nachman, Rav Yitzchak, manavim rishonim. Who are the Nevi'im Rishonim? Lafuke mechagai zechayi umalachi dachronim ninu. So once they actually come, the Nevi'im Rishonim is everyone other than the Nevi'im Achronim. Right? Who are the Nevi'im Achronim? Chagai zechayi umalachi. The Tanna Rabbanon, mishameso chagai zechayi umalachi, nistaku ruach HaKodesh miYisrael. After chagai zechayi umalachi died, ultimately again, ruach HaKodesh was no longer in Klal Yisrael. Ve'afabi came, hayu mishtamshim bebaskol. The boss is incredible. So I will say, so essentially what you have over here is as follows. You had Urim V'Tumim. Once Urim V'Tumim stopped working, there was still Ruach HaKodesh Nevi'im. And once Ruach HaKodesh Nevi'im stopped working, there was still Baskol. Baskol. A heavenly voice. The boss said, the Gemara gives two stories about a Baskol. Which is incredible. Shepam Ha'achos, Ha'imusum Balias Beskuria B'Yericho. One time, there were a group of rabbis who were in an attic, Beis Aliyah in Yericho. And what happens? In the house of Guria in Yericho, Nasna alein baskol min hashamayim. A heavenly voice came out and said to them, "Yesh b'chem adam echad sharay shetishcha ala shetishre shchina alav." There is a man in this group over here, baskol said, who is fit for prophecy. Ela shein dora roi lekach, but the generation is not worthy. Nasnu einayim behilal azakim. So we'll say who is in the chevra over there? Hillel. Hillel. So everybody set their eyes and they understood that the Baskol was talking about Hillel. So we'll say Kishemesa, when Hillel died, Hispiduhu, they eulogized him, Hey Chasid, Hey Anav, Tamudosh Ezra. We'll say, oh, where has the Chasid gone? Where has the pious one gone? Where has the humble one gone? The Talmud of the student of Ezra. We'll say, I'll just one more story. One time the group of rabbis were sitting in an attic in Yavne, Nastalah and Baskol in Shemaim. A Baskol came out and said, "There is a person amongst you who is fit for prophecy, but the generation doesn't deserve it." What happened? Nastalah named Shmuel Hakatan. Everyone set their eyes on Shmuel. Shmuel Hakatan. Okay, Shemesis Pidu, when he died, they eulogized. We'll say first the widest lines. Hey Anav, Hey Chasid, Tamidav Shel Hillel. Where has the humble one gone? Where has the pious one gone? The student of Hillel. So I will say, I'll just point out here something amazing. What do you see from here? So I will say that there are two ways in which we actualize our greatness. Right? Number one is what we're able to do for ourselves, and number two is what we're able to do in the context of the klal. I'll say, which is an incredible, incredible yesod. So remember again, and when it comes to actualizing our greatness in the context of the klal, not only do I have to be worthy, but the klal has to be worthy as well. So you could have a person who is great. You could have a person who is great, but if the generation is not deserving, there is only so much he will be able to accomplish in the context of the collective. So as an individual, there's no limit to what I can do. Right, bein adam liatzmo. Right, in terms of the actualization of my own personal greatness, that is between me and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But in terms of what I could do for the klal, what I could do ultimately again for the collective, so that's about my effort, but that's also about what the klal is deserving of. So in other words, I could be putting in maximum effort. I would say this is why people think that effective leadership is just about the leader. Effective leadership is about the leader, but also a willingness of the constituency, a willingness of the flock to grow as well. You could have the most incredible leader, but if the community is not interested, he can't do it. I will say the greatest raya to this was who? Moshe Rabbeinu, right? Lo kam b'Yisrael ki Moshe od. Yet there were times that Klal Yisrael was simply unwilling. So if you're unwilling, you could literally have Moshe Rabbeinu at your helm, and he still can't affect change. So that's what's happening. The Baskol is saying, you have a Hillel, you have a Shmuel, but at the end of the day, they can actualize their personalistic greatness. But if the generation is not deserving, there's only so much that they can do ultimately for the collective. And Jabose tells us, if we work on ourselves as individuals, we enable our leaders to be greater as well. People often don't think this way, right? People think that great leadership comes from great leaders. What we don't realize is sometimes great leaders come from great constituencies. That when you have groups of people who want to self-actualize and groups of people who want to become great themselves, that enables great leadership to accomplish great things as well. Okay, let's go back there. So the Gemara says, "Va'afhu arm b'shas misaso." And he also said at the time of his death, Shmuel said at the kind of time of his death, Shimon v'yishma l'charva. Unfortunately, again, right, Shimon. Right, the Rambam says, this is Rabbi Shimon, who was the Nasi, and Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha was the Kohen Gadol. L'charva, they're going to be killed by the Romans. V'chavroi l'katla, the other rabbis, was the Asar Harugei Malkos. The other rabbis are going to be killed as well. Ushar amal abiza va'akon segin asidu l'meisei al amal. And the rest of the nation ultimately is going to be plundered, and tragedies are going to befall the people. In other words, he saw prophetically what was going to happen again with the Romans and persecution. Va'af al Rabbi Huda ben Baba, big shulomar hechaset heyanav. When Rabbi Huda ben Baba died or was killed, they wanted to go ahead and also eulogize him. What has happened to the pious? What has happened to the hamor? Ella shenitra v'shaita. But the moment was snatched from them. Why? Shein must be the harugim achz. This is incredible. Rabbi Huda ben Baba was executed by the Romans. You can't eulogize people killed by the government. Why not? Because it's going to get you into incredible trouble with the monarchy. Because if they see you eulogizing and extolling people they executed, you're glorifying criminals of the state, or enemies of the state. So they couldn't properly eulogize you with the Membab. Incredible. When the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, the Shamir stopped to it. What's the Shamir? Shamir, Shebo, Bono Shalom, Beis Hamikdash. The Shamir was like this worm-like creature that was able to cut through stone. And it's what Shlomo used to build the Beis Hamikdash. Why? Shneemar, va'abai simano. So even Shlomo masa nivna hadron kisvan de Rabbi Yehuda. What Rabbi Yehuda says, the Beis Hamikdash had to be built with stones that could not be cut with metal. And therefore, again, I will say, so I'm Rabbi Nechamia v'chi Eshel Lomar. Can you actually say that? V'halo kvar neemar kol eila abani mikaros miguros b'migira. I'll say the pasuk says ultimately again, the stones were hewn with a sharp object. MK Matam Lomar. So what does it mean therefore when it says that the chiseling of stone was not heard in the Kishon of Beis HaMikdash? Shay Metakin Mibachutz Umachnis Mibifnim. It means they didn't chisel the stones by the actual site of the Beis HaMikdash. They would chisel the stones outside of the site and bring in chiseled stone to the site. So both say a fundamental machlokes. One opinion says, right, Rabbi Yehuda says they did not chisel stone. Rather, the stone was miraculously cut with the shamir. Second opinion says, no, they actually chiseled stone. They just didn't do the chiseling, which makes a lot of noise. Ultimately, by the site of the extension, they did it at an outside area and brought the already chiseled stones in. I'm a Rebbe. Named Rebbe Yehuda. Rebbe, it sounds like Rebbe Yehuda is correct. The Avnei Mikdash. V'edivnei Rebbe Nechemia ba'avnei Beiso. Sounds like Rebbe Yehuda is correct that they used the shamir for the stones of the Beis HaMikdash, and Rabbi Nechemiah is correct with the stones used to build the palace of Shlomo. Right? That those stones were chiseled, but not chiseled on site, chiseled at a different place. Rabbi Nechemiah, Shamir Lamai Asa. So according to Rabbi Nechemiah, that the stones were chiseled, what did they use the Shamir for? Avanim halalu in kosin osam biyado, mishun shnara pituche chosam. So this is incredible. According to Rabbi Nechemiah, they did not use the Shamir for the stones of the Mikdash. So what did they use the stones of the Shamir for, Mosai? For the stones of the Choshen, right? Avnei Ephod, Avnei Ros. Remember again, there were a number, all the stones that the Kohen Gadol wore on his Kohen Gadol uniform, right, had letters engraved on them. How were the letters engraved? So I will say, so ultimately again, you can't say that it was written in ink. Mishum Shnara Pituchei Chosam. It was engraved. Vein Mesartalem Bizeon Mishum Shnara Milosam. But if you can't, I will say, what happens when you engrave? When you engrave, by definition, part of the stone is missing. And it says that the stones of the Kohen Gadol were complete. So Rabbi says, how did you do it? Ella, kol sefalei b'diyah. Rabbi says, what would they do? They would write with ink on the stones. Umar len shamir mevachutz. They nifkos be'alein. So what would they do? They would go ahead and write on the stones and then put the shamir on top of letters. Rabbi says, what would the shamir do? The shamir would kind of like sink into the stone. Not chiseling, not sinking into the stones. He says, ve'ein chasira klum. And therefore, the stone of Tetra Bosei would essentially like open up. Therefore, there was nothing missing from the stone. Like a fig, Bosei. Whenever you see a fig, like a fully ripened fig, what happens? It begins to open up. The whole fig is there, but it's open. Like the ground that swells, that opens up during the rainy season. So I will say, interesting, a fundamental machlokes about what the shamir was used for.
One opinion saying the shamir was used ultimately again to hew the stones of the Beis HaMikdash. Second opinion saying, no, the stones of the Mikdash were chiseled, not chiseled on site, chiseled out of, I guess, the quarry, wherever else it was, and then brought to the Mikdash. So second opinion says, what was the shamir used for? The shamir was used to ultimately again engrave the stones of the Choshen and of the Ephod. Because those stones are supposed to have to be engraved, but they can't be deficient. The problem is if you chisel, by definition, it's deficient. So I said, what would they do? Outline it with some type of dio, with some type of ink. Put the shamir on it, and then the stone would open up. The same way that a ripened fig opens up, saturated earth opens up. It opens, but it's still fully intact. So I said, we'll stop over for today. We're leaving off in the middle of the conversation with the shamir. So still more about the shamir. I will say tomorrow, Amir Tzashem, B'shatov M'slachos. I will have that last stuff of salt. I will say, Shkayach, and I apologize for the pace. Shkayach, everyone. All right, Chevron Zoom. Have a great day, everyone. Incredible. What a marathon. Salt a marathon. Tomorrow, Amir Tzashem. Tomorrow, last day, Shkayach.